The biggest stories of 2020, part two. Today on Life Talks, we're going to dig into a couple of other things, Dan, that we think that every Christian should know what's happening because of COVID. And we talked about COVID last episode, but there are implications, there are stories, there are movements, there were big things that happened last year that maybe we missed because we didn't hear about it, see it. But I think all these stories that we're talking about, there's repercussions to them, right? I mean, that's why we're talking about it. So let's talk a little bit. We covered three stories last episode. Let's go. You're up first.
Okay. Well,
what's a story that
we need
to be aware of?
So I'm going to connect this to our number one story because they are related.
Okay.
And you know, when we talk about the pandemic, one of the things I think has come out of it is both the limitations of and the opportunities that lie within the concept of virtual church.
Hmm.
So the pandemic kind of kick-started it, or it maybe gave it a big boost. It was always out there. People were talking about virtual congregations. They were talking about being able to attend, you know, church virtually. I think the pandemic forced a lot of people, you know, to remember the first couple of weeks when these poor folks who had never, ever experienced any of this.
Yeah.
And so they're propping their iPhone up on a stand and trying to preach.
Yes.
And it was just...
It was pathetic. I read this on Lifeway, who does a lot of research. Only 22% of churches in North America were ready to put their services online at any capacity. Yeah. 22%.
And that's where Life Fellowship was so blessed because of the excellent leadership of people like our producer here, Britt Nipper,
I thought you were going to say ourselves. I'm like, Dan, don't.
Oh, no.
This was not us at all.
Everybody would have laughed if they'd said if you and I had taken credit for this. But
yeah,
you know, no. Jason Lanier and his team, but Britt Nipper and his team of excellent media professionals.
And the gift of people to this church for these projects.
Yeah, absolutely. People who gave to make it happen. And you know, even when we got those gifts originally, we were like, do we really want to use this? And we had no idea.
Yeah.
But I think we've learned a couple of things. First of all, virtual church as a concept is flawed at best.
Yes.
People are voting with their feet, so to speak, on this. We all know that the first few weeks of the pandemic, everybody was like, oh my goodness, look at how many people I'm reaching.
Yeah.
And now it's like, anybody out there? Hello? You know, anybody out there? So part of it is you do not get the same experience online that you do when you're sitting in the room with the other parts of the body of Christ. At the same time, on the flip side of it, there have been things that have been helpful. There have been some ways to meet that have not required proximity. And I'm about zoomed out, and I know you are too. But there are also times, I mean, I'm collaborating now with people internationally that I've never done before, and it's been good. And I don't have to get on an airplane, and we don't have to spend thousands of dollars to do it. So that has been good. But there's also been some training that you've been able to do.
Yeah.
And we also know that there are folks who are reaching into parts of the world that are previously unreachable, particularly in the Middle East. There are some things going on with taking the gospel via the internet into the 1040 window, into closed countries that are phenomenal. Now, I spend some time, you know, traveling internationally and teaching. I have some people I mentor internationally. And I can tell you that YouTube is one of the greatest seminaries a lot of national pastors around the world are going to.
Hmm.
They're absolutely hanging on every word of people like John Piper and Timothy Keller and those folks and growing huge spiritually, huge steps forward spiritually. So I would think that one of the things we're seeing in 2020 is the raw potential of the church using the internet and also the limitations.
I think 100% agree. I think churches and theologians are going to have to come up with a theology of technology.
Yes.
I think what we are seeing is churches seems to be responding to tech, like, okay, now we can do this. What does the church? So I think the time is now, what are the guardrails that theologically we can say, this is what the Bible should guide us in? Because, we are now, it's not a matter of can we do it, now it's a matter of should we do it.
Yes.
And that's the progress, technology, science, there's so many things that we're capable of doing that we're not sure if we should do them. And I think that's where churches, we need to stop reacting to things and start developing a really a theology of technology to make sure that there's some guardrails up for us to move forward in the future. So I think that technological advances have definitely caused us to rethink these things, and we're going to have to keep rethinking these things. Okay.
What's your next one?
Mine is obviously the impact of the murder of George Floyd and the repercussions of dealing with racism really across American life, especially regarding the church. I think very few churches, you know, when the murder of George Floyd happened, a lot of churches, especially churches like ours that are predominantly white, predominantly in
suburban,
upper middle class suburban areas, we're really at a loss of how do we respond to this, because we recognize there's something wrong. And some of the things that, you know, when you have African American friends who tell you stories and but it's never something you've experienced, and to see something like it leaves an impact, it leaves a mark. And I think, you know, we had that conversation with Carl in here a number of months ago. But I think the ongoing response to the church has been one in which there's churches that are doing that are really moving forward. There's churches that are still trying to figure out what the best, you know, way to address some of these issues. But I think the church has been awakened to say, hey, we need to recognize some things. We need to do something, but we're still not sure what we do. Because a lot of the implications or the repercussions of the George Floyd murder saw the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement. And there has been a lot of division. Again, doesn't seem like there is any unified understanding of anything in with the Church of Jesus Christ. You had some church leaders that were coming out and saying, hey, the Black Lives Matter movement is important. Guys like J.D. Greer, president of the Southern Baptist Convention. You had other pastors come out and say, no, this is a Marxist ideology because of the organization Black Lives Matter. And there just seems to be like, am I allowed to say Black Lives Matter without it becoming political? You know, like there's...
Yeah, you may be allowed to, but it's going to be.
I think the reality, and one of the repercussions, and this is kind of like an add-on to this thing, everything has become political in 2020.
Yes.
So Black Lives Matter is political. Sports, you can't watch sports without some kind of political statement now. You can't go on social media. I mean...
Can't watch an award show on
television. Watch an award show. COVID, how you respond to COVID, like... It's almost like, what is I belong to this political tribe, and however they respond to sports, COVID, religion, social media, racism, whatever, that's my position. Hmm. There's no nuance. There's no conversation. There's no debate. There's no open dialogue happening. It's purely, let's all, you know, if this is the tribe I'm a part of, this is the corner I stand in, and it interprets everything, how I see everything. And it's, again, more polarization. When you look at what has happened in the events of the, you know, riots in cities and things like that, you know, you think, is there something we can come together with? Mm-hmm. But I believe because of the fracturing of worldviews, and it just has caused so many churches to say, throw our hands up and say, we want to do something, but we're not sure what to do because we don't want to alienate this people. It's just like masks, you know. Yeah. Everything has become politicized. And so I think the ongoing debate, not even debate, maybe the debate's the wrong word, the ongoing search for how do we address real problems when we see them? How do we address issues of racism in our cities and other places? How do we continue to make the gospel priority number one? How do we break down the dividing, that passage in Ephesians 2, that Jesus came to break down the dividing wall of hostility amongst people. And he was talking about Jews and Gentiles in that mm-hmm. passage. But there's a dividing wall of hostility that exists in humanity between black and white, or Hispanic, or minority, majority,
males, females,
yeah. Republican, Democrat. I mean, there are dividing walls of hostility throughout our country, throughout the world, and the gospel brings down, but how do we do it? I think there is the debate, the discussion, without it turning into some political rally, is one of the hardest things that we're trying to navigate. But that's a big story and a big issue that we've got to continue to think about.
It is, and you used two words there, but what it comes down to is, are we going to compromise our core beliefs? Are we going to polarize around on things that are not essential?
Yes.
And what we often see is at a level of frustration, when we hit a level of frustration and confusion, mm-hmm. we either throw up our hands and we cede important ground through compromise, or we throw up our hand and we go to these corners of extreme positions and refuse to dialogue about them.
Yes.
And in the two, I don't think either one is healthy. You know, compromise is the lifeblood of politics and relationships, but it is the death knell of sound theology. Mm-hmm. So we have to say there's some things that are going to guide my worldview. The theology is the foundation for all of everything from beliefs, practices, philosophy, and everything else. So that is essential. But when we refuse to have conversations about differences of opinion on non-essential issues or upon problems, then we're never going to make progress, and we're going to end up going to war, and we're going to end up shedding blood. Yeah. And I'm afraid that's kind of where we're headed, and we're going to divide and factionalize, and we're seeing that all over. So, I mean, I think it's one of the biggest stories.
Yeah.
And so I'll go ahead and add mine because it's related to this, because so many of them overlap. Mm-hmm. And that is the rise of intersectionalism and the rise of critical race theory.
Yes.
As theological construct. No, they're philosophical constructs, but they have theological implications.
Absolutely.
Now, there's no way that you and I can go into this today. And
we probably need to do a series
on critical race theory. We need to do a series on CRT
and
intersectionalism. And so we'll try to do that in 2021 so that you're versed in the issues. But these are critical issues because they have to do with our definitions of truth and what we accept for our theological foundations. And that's where you can have just enough information to make you dangerous or to make you seem extreme. And it's why some people have rejected the Black Lives Movement as an organization because they have adopted unsound theology and unsound philosophy. But in refusing the organization, they're also at times refusing to recognize that there is a problem.
Absolutely.
There is a solution to the problem. It's always the gospel. Mm-hmm. But we polarize and then we fossilize. Mm. And so we become rock hard on our decision.
Yeah. So I mean, think about we came out I think it was like 2 days after the video kind of went viral. It was a Sunday morning, and it was the first Sunday we came back in the building. And you and I mean, literally that morning we're thinking, we need to say something.
You can't not say something.
I mean, we were not necessarily prepared for a long conversation, but we came out and talked about it for about 5 minutes, right? You and I both kind of addressed the issue and, you know, try to empathize and understand that there's something wrong here, but we don't know. We don't have all the answers. We don't have all the words to even put, but here's what we know. Something's wrong. Something must be done. That's kind of what we said, right? And we got emails that week from people that said, from our church that said, you didn't say enough. You didn't address this enough. You didn't deal with this. You did it all wrong. And then we heard from some people saying, you know, what you're talking about on the state, like, you sound, you know, you do, what you're saying is too liberal. I mean, we're just like,
so much so we actually did another clarifying statement the next week, and anybody wasn't ticked off before that got ticked off. Right?
So I mean, I think it's, again, we're trying to say, what do you say about problems that are real that don't get reacted upon, like you didn't say enough or what you're doing is too much? And I think this is what is so difficult about this year. It seems like the common theme of 2020 is there's a fracturedness.
Right.
There's a fracturedness in our country. There's a fracturedness in our churches. There's a fracturedness in every walk of life. And it feels like, what could bring us together? And for you, theoretically and convictionally, we would say it is Jesus that's the only one that can bring us together. But we're sitting here as students at the feet of Jesus saying, Jesus, show us how that looks.
Yeah.
Because if we are finding our identity or our purpose in anything else but Jesus Christ, we will fracture.
Yeah.
We will, like you said, we will polarize and we will fossilize. We will divide and Satan will conquer.
And you and I, as pastors, we have a responsibility to not say nothing.
Yes.
We have to apply the word of God to these things. Yeah. It's uncomfortable. You and I like to be liked. I don't like it when people hate me. You know? But at the same time, sometimes we have to make people uncomfortable so they'll have the conversation, so they'll look to Scripture.
Yeah.
And if you're in a church where the pastor is doing his best, first, don't expect perfection from him, but respect the fact he's at least trying to get a dialogue going and to open the Bible and to do this. Solutions are not necessarily easy and quick, and anybody who thinks they have all the answers has an arrogance problem. Mm. But saying nothing, doing nothing is not a viable position yeah. when you're in the midst of crisis.
Yeah.
That, you know, we've been talking about these kind of issues that have divided the church, you know, whether the pandemic or the racial injustice issue and social unrest. We might as well bring up the other one.
What's that?
I'll just say this. It's huge. Really huge.
It's huge.
And for me, I would say, and I'm pretty critical of this. Y'all know, everybody knows this, but I think it is the rise of evangelical nationalism, which integrates political activity with theology that I have some pretty significant concerns about.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you don't, but I mean, because I have a big interest in politics, it seems to be something that, and also because I've staked out perhaps a, you know, I'm a little bit of a contrarian. I know that surprises people.
Well, I think what we've seen, and this is again the fracturedness that in the months leading up to Donald Trump's or to the election, you had multiple articles by three men that I would say the majority of evangelicals would look to as voices, leaders: John MacArthur, Tim Keller, and John Piper.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Wayne Grudem. He had
and
one
Wayne
earlier,
Grudem, yeah. right? So. John MacArthur comes out, and I can't remember if it was a sermon or an article, but he said, "I do not know how a Bible-believing Christian who loves Jesus could ever vote for Joe Biden."
Yeah.
John Piper comes out and says, "I do not know how you can, you know, be a Christian and vote for Donald Trump." Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's like, in Timothy Keller, you know, he came out with kind of a moderate position. Wayne Grudem, you know, kind of rebuttal to John Piper, and it was just like, if you're a Christian trying to navigate the waters of the election and Christianity and all politics, it felt like a whirlwind.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, there is a massive problem between the Christians that look to, and then it's kind of like dominion theology, like our hope in the future and our hope in the thriving of the church is tied to the political party that I'm rooting for.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's kind of what it is.
And here's something that irks me about it to some extent is also we seem to be willing to build alliances that confuse our theology or the impression of our theology for the sake of political power.
Yeah.
So, specifically, you know, Donald Trump, in an effort to build bridges to the evangelical community, put a woman by the name of Paula White in as the, you know, some kind of official position in the administration to represent evangelicals. I can list about how many people on their planet are there? 6 billion? About 5 billion. You know, 999,999,000 that I would rather represent me than Paula White. You know, she's a multiple married, extreme charismatic, hears voices, lunatic. And somebody's going to send me a letter and bring it on, all right? Because she's not somebody I want representing me, my doctrine, my faith, my walk with God, my theology, or anything else. And yet she becomes a spokesman for basically our position to the entire world. And I got to tell you, I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
I do. And I have a problem with a lot of guys who believe good orthodox theology who say, oh, well, it's okay. It's just politics. No, it's not just politics. It's just the gospel. It's just truth. Mm. It's just people's perception of what Jesus came to do. And he didn't come to put people in political office. He came to seek and to save those who were lost. And when we muddy up our theology by flawed affiliations for political purposes, I think we build walls and we build doors where we need to be building windows and bridges. And so that, I mean, that came across really strong because I feel pretty passionate about that.
Yeah.
And even people I like and I respect, Eric Metaxas, who's a great apologist and whatever.
Yeah. Love his writings.
Was recently on the White House or on the Capitol lawn doing something, you know, where he continues to be in a state of denial about who's going to be the next president. And he made some things that were theologically problematic to their very, very core, but he did it because he's whipped up politically, and it's made him emotional about his theology, and it's a dangerous place to be in. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to be preachers of the gospel, if we're going to be defenders of theology, we need to be very, very careful about our alliances, our affiliations, and our public statements. We do not speak for God. God has already spoken, and it is found in his word. We ought not add to it. We ought not take from it. We ought to be very, very careful that if that is our calling and that is our ministry, that no position that we take interferes with the ability of people to see Jesus in us and through our message.
Amen. I don't think we have time to cover another story.
We're going to have to do a third one?
I guess so.
All right. We're going to have to talk really fast because we still got a lot left.
I know. I guess maybe we'll have to edit. We'll just do three. We don't want people to prolong this. But hey, this has been, these are all things. We're not sitting here today saying that Dan and I have all the answers. We are working through all these things. But we're looking at these stories and we're navigating these waters and saying, we're not sure if anyone is approaching these things with a pure motives, the wisdom to say, Jesus, help us, whether it's racism or politics or the fracturing of our nation and of the church, we all need help and we all need wisdom and we need to go to our authority, our King, and that is Jesus. And so I hope that you will do that. We're going to do that. We're going to hopefully... We're going to commit ourselves to leading our church in that direction. But I hope this has been a thought-provoking episode for you at Life Talks. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well. So leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.